All guests come to you via the Fire Wings hotline. Try one of their delicious flavors of wings today. Fire Wings, just wing it. Busy, busy day. I'm actually in L.A. today, coming to you from the studio where I'll be doing Jim Rome's show tomorrow. And then Doug and I will be at Golden One Center getting ready for opening night tomorrow, the Kings and the Jazz. And, yeah, we have NFL football to talk about. Always great to have Charles Davis, the NFL on Fox. Charles, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys tonight?
Doing well. You just saw Carolina and Washington, and I'm going to get to Carolina in a minute because you've got them again this week at Philadelphia. And I want to talk to you first about Washington because they got a huge game coming up. They got Dallas who blew out Jacksonville. I don't have a good read on Washington. After watching them, what do you think their ceiling is?
Boy, that's a great question. Ceiling? And the way the NFC East is going this year, their ceiling is actually a division title. But here's the issue. They are maybe the most front-running team in the NFL, and that's not a compliment. And that is not something just I'm saying. That's straight from their head coach. He told us, and that this is twice now we've had them, told us before Green Bay that we are a front-running team. When we get out to great starts, we play well. I can't for the life of me, and I'm paraphrasing a little bit, so I want to be a perfect translation. But what he said was, when we are behind, we can't crack. We haven't cracked the code yet on what it's going to take to play from the back. Now think about their season, and I'll be brief on this. At Arizona, pounded them, got out to a great start, jumped on them. At home against Indianapolis, got down, never found their way back. Green Bay, jumped out on Green Bay, you know, and in the second half only had 63 yards of total offense. But it built a cushion, and the defense played well, and they won that game. New Orleans jumped on them early, and you saw the end result of that. Got out to a 17-0 lead against Carolina last week, wins the ball game. They are very predictable so far by their starts, and if they can build a cushion early. That's why, yes, they can win a division, but until they figure out how to get off of this roller coaster, and guys, it's a three-year roller coaster. This isn't just this season. This is what it's been like throughout. I think, if I remember correctly, the longest winning streak under Jay Gruden has been four games. I think on three occasions, four max, I shouldn't say max, I think three, four occasions, they've won two in a row in the regular season. So you can see what you've got with this team. And that's what they're desperately trying to crack that code, because they said the exact same thing after the loss to New Orleans that they said after the loss to Indianapolis, and it came from the defensive guys. Guys have to be serious in practice. Guys have to be locked in and focused. We can't be out there joking around. I was like, how many times do you have to say the same thing? You know, what's it going to take to figure this thing out? It's the same conversation they've had for a long time. So, yes, if they ever crack the code, they've got some pretty darn good talent, and they play together. But until they get off this roller coaster, it's going to be hard for everyone to, you know, flat out believe in them. And they've got their opportunities coming up.
You know, Charles, the team that they played, the Panthers, I think, Grant, both of us picked the Panthers to win, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. But when you look at them, they beat Dallas week one by 8 points. Then they lose to the Falcons by a touchdown. They beat a Bengals team that looks to be pretty good. They squeak by the Giants. And the Bengals and the Giants, that was coming off of a bye week. And now they lose this game. How close these games have been, this could be a bad season for them. They're kind of hovering around 500. Who is this Panthers team?
That's a great question. They're asking the same thing, but I don't think to the same extent, Doug, that Washington is. Washington is, as we said, is a multi-year roller coaster.
Mm-hmm.
Carolina, we're talking about right now, and they've been to the playoffs for the last 5 years. So they understand how to win football games. And last year, in games decided by 7 points or less, they were 7-1. This year, I believe they are 1-2.
Yep, that's right.
So there's the difference for them. They're used to winning the close games. They haven't done it early. Doesn't mean they won't. But to me, I look at their defense more than anything. And that's unusual because defense is always the standard there, and they play to a certain level. But they've been very inconsistent. At times, they look like the shutdown defense you would expect. And they talk about the number of Pro Bowlers they start on defense, and all of that is true. But their consistency just hasn't been there every game. And until that comes back, they're going to be in games like we've seen so far, Doug. Now, if they get their defense going, And look at that. Look, they've got a great rotation up front. Plenty of guys. Julius Peppers got his first sack of the year. Then the linebackers, you get Thomas Davis back last week. So now you got Davis and Keekly. Yep. And then you get the secondary that's pretty good, too, with the addition of Eric Reed. They should be one of the top 10 units in the league. They just need to play to that level.
We're talking with Charles Davis, the NFL on Fox. You know, I think a lot of fans would find it interesting what a network announcer's life is like from Sunday to Sunday. And you also do the voiceover on Madden, which I know you do on Tuesdays. But can you take us through what would be a normal week for you during the NFL season, starting, let's say, the game on Sunday, we know. So let's talk about you fly home. So let's pick it up from there.
Okay, well, this is just me, and everyone does it differently, as you know, because you do it at a minimum of 100 times a year.
Right.
Okay, and calling games, right, when you're talking about preseason, playoffs, right, everything else that you do. So we all do it differently. We all have our ways. For me, I start on the next game on the plane home. All right, so I have my materials that I'm going to have for my next ball game, and we almost always have that. And I just start on it then, work all the way home. And part of that is because I'm a terrible flyer. Okay, so I need something to occupy me. Otherwise, I'll just, every bump, I think, oh, boy, that's it. I'm just not good. And then Monday, I, do the normal stuff that you would do. You work out. I go and work at Madden on Monday during the days. And then in the evenings, I work on my game and study. Tuesday, same thing. Wednesday, get your workouts in, study during the day. Thursday, workouts in, study, and I usually catch my flight to my game site Thursday night. And then Friday, you're on your game site, and that's when we go to the home team practice and have our meetings with the home team, typically your head coach, your offensive and defensive coordinators, quarterback, and one defender is how our unit does it. We don't like to ask for a lot of guys. Doug could probably speak to this. If you're waiting around on the day, it's kind of a getaway day for the guys. Once practice is over, they can go take care of stuff.
Forget
you,
about it.
Doug, you don't want to sit around waiting for us.
Not a chance, Charles.
And if we do ask for you, and we're asking for you, and you're like eighth or ninth in the queue,
by the time
you walk in the room, the last thing you want to do is talk to us, so there's nothing to get. So we're very cognizant of that, and we try and keep it limited. And if the head coach handles, like if his expertise is offense or defense, and if he calls plays, then we don't ask for the coordinator on that side of the ball. Because we find that, to me, that's superfluous at that point. So that's what we try and do. And then
are there any reviews of the telecast that you would have done
every week?
Okay, and is that with just you? Is it with a network executive and you and the play-by-play guy, or how does that work?
It's all. What they do is they review the broadcast in its entirety. Obviously, that includes all of us yapping, but they also review the technical aspects of it. And
wow.
It's an anonymous person who's in the business and knows the business.
Wow.
And they rotate who gets our review, so you don't get the same reviewer every week. So that's a very good thing because it's fresh eyes, it's different ears, all of those things. But we just got our review today from last week's game, so I haven't even had a chance to review it yet. I always view it with trepidation, like, oh, God, what did I mess up?
Right.
But it's also a great tool for us about, hey, if you're doing this well, do that. If you're not doing this so well, this is where you need to improve. So it's a very good thing. But we get reviewed each and every week, just like the officials get reviewed, like the coaches do game tape with their players. But it's an anonymous person that we don't know who it is, and it's a smart thing that we don't. Because you know how it is when you get a review and you want to go, hey, hold on a second, this is what I meant.
Right.
And you'll be chasing that for forever. The best thing to do is take it for what it's worth. Some things you'll agree with, some things you'll disagree with. But at the same time, if you have an open mind, and it's hard, I'm a Scorpio, okay, so I hate criticism.
Right.
But if you have an open mind, there's a lot there that you can get and learn and try and get better.
Charles, do you take that information then and work on it yourself, or does the NFL or Fox give you somebody that you can work with if there's something that you want to work on?
Yeah, I have on our crew, I asked one of our assistants, they're called BAs, mm-hmm. broadcast associates, and every week he compiles a clips book, a newspaper clippings book for each team. Mm-hmm. Articles from there, player breakdowns, all that kind of stuff. And that's what I, study to get background on all of it. And then, Doug, we get a ton of information from the league and from both teams. Gotcha. You know, all the stats that you want, you know, that's at your disposal. The team send out their press releases. You go through all those. And then there's the phone calls. I'll talk to people in those cities that I know and trust. You know, you might have some phone calls with relationships with people who are on the team. You know how it goes.
Yeah.
All that stuff. And you compile it and you try and distill it. And then you go out there and hopefully do a halfway decent job.
I wanted to get your reaction to what John Mara said today in reference to Odell Beckham. Quote, I wish he would create the headlines by his play on the field as opposed to what he says and what he does off the field. I think he needs to do a little more playing and a little less talking. I wonder how that goes over with number 13.
I don't think John Mara cares anymore, and that's why he said it publicly.
Yeah.
You know, I think that he said it privately to him. I mean, I'd be shocked if he didn't. He's the man who runs the team and agreed to that contract with Odell Beckham. And I have to believe this. And look, contract negotiations are typically the agent and the team, right? That's why you have an agent, so you don't have the personal aspect of, oh, yeah, you're the guy that screwed me for my money, right? It was someone that, you know, you have a buffer. That's why you have an agent. I have to believe, though, that in the course of these conversations, whether it was directly to the agent, but I think more likely directly to Odell. We're doing this because we believe in you. We're doing this because you're showing that you want to be, you know, team first and less of this chit chat that's going on. And already I have to believe that tacit agreement, the Giants believe, has been violated by Beckham. And that's why I believe John Mara spoke out publicly today. Because I don't think there's a chance in heck he didn't already say it to Odell. I just don't believe that at all. I think he said it to him privately, and I guarantee he expressed disappointment. The interview with Josina Anderson, the constant talking about what's going on here. And if you saw that interview, which I finally went back and saw, there's a whole lot of what everyone else needs to do. I didn't hear what Odell needs to do.
Great point.
And I think John Mara probably told him that point blank and then said it publicly today to drive home his point. The problem is the contract's been signed and the money's guaranteed. Now what do you do? All right. If he continues to go down this path, the good thing is I know Coach Gettleman, the GM, and he's one of your original tough guys.
Mm-hmm.
And if the owner will sign off on it, they will work hard on correcting all of that. Now, that's where it's going to sit. And will Odell make those changes? I'm pessimistic because he made the changes towards getting the contract, and it almost felt like as soon as the contract was signed and adversity hit, we were right back to where we were.
When you say that Gettleman will work hard to make the changes, do you mean to work with Odell or to work with getting him?
He'll go in there. He'll go in there and tell Odell to shut the heck up.
Okay. I got you.
Yeah, but that hasn't worked yet.
Coach, it hasn't worked yet, but this is Dave Gettleman's first go-around. And remember, he's been sick. He's been battling cancer, leukemia treatment, the whole deal. He just got cleared the week of the Carolina game by the doctors. So he hasn't been full-time, and I don't know that he's had the energy, and I doubt his doctors, and I'm sure the Maris, the fam Maris. Yeah.
Turn him loose.
Dave. Now's not the time for you to be involved in this. Let's get on it. But I think now, look, I've known Coach Gettleman. I played against him in high school. He is your classic, old-school, tough-talking guy. If you don't believe it, ask Josh Norman how that went in Carolina.
Oh.
Yeah, and he's not there anymore.
He's the one. Coach Gettleman's the one who rescinded the contract offer.
Wow.
And said, forget it. And everyone went crazy about the whole thing. But the truth of the matter is, has Josh Norman played to the level of 2015 since he's been in Washington? And the answer is no.
They were complaining about him, some of his teammates and things. Then he got his first interception last night.
The first interception, punched the ball free for a forced fumble, but in the fourth quarter. Now, what was interesting was Carolina studiously avoided him during the game. They attacked Quentin Dunbar.
Mm-hmm.
But in the fourth quarter, Torrey Smith, I think he caught six or seven balls for the game. I think he caught four or five on Josh Norman in the fourth quarter. So it's not like he had a perfectly clean game. Yep. Was it better?
Yeah.
Yes, it was definitely better, Doug.
Right.
But was
right.
it clean? No, it wasn't clean. There's still work to be done. But I don't think people overall are absolutely saying going into a game, hey, we can't throw it at all in Norman's area. Yeah. I don't believe that for a second. And, you know, I'm not trying to say, hey, Coach Gettleman's right, Norman's wrong. I'm just saying Dave Gettleman in the past has shown that he will take a hard line with contracts, with people, and it hasn't been popular. If you don't believe me, go ask those Carolina Panthers like Steve Smith. You know, who was the running back there? Williams, right? I mean, just go right down the line. There's a good number of them. Jordan Gross, the offensive tackle, that didn't feel like maybe they got what they wanted to get because the GM made a different decision. Yeah.
Charles, I'm talking to Phil Sims in the morning.
And
I love Phil, and I wanted to get his perspective.
Will you do me a favor, Grant, before you ask this question?
Yeah.
Will you just tell him that it's going to sound like the classic suck-up, and I don't mean for it to, but I bought his book on broadcasting years ago.
Uh-huh.
And I refer to – I actually took notes on it that I keep with me, and I refer to sections of it before every game that I do.
Wow.
And I don't care that I've just said this publicly because I can hear people going, well, wow, Phil Sims, because you know the criticism, this, that, and everything.
Yep.
That man did that for 20-plus years as the number one broadcaster.
Yep.
That's a heck of a cauldron, working out of that, calling them the biggest game, Super Bowls, played to a level that, in a lot of ways, equals Hall of Fame, had one of the great Super Bowl games as a quarterback that's ever been played after a concussion, 22 of 25 throwing the ball that day. Don't tell me you can't learn something from Phil Sims, because I do all the time.
So that was January 25th, 1987, and I was there. Thank you very much. Just in case we forgot the date, I want to remind everybody.
Goodness. So anyway, if you just tell
him, I will.
I really appreciated that book and continue to refer to it.
I wanted to get his perspective, and then I want to get yours, because I'm going to talk about two things here, but I think they're similar issues. Derek Carr is coming off a horrendous game and has not looked good this year. But in the game in London, his offensive line was putrid. It was horrible. I don't know if any quarterback could have excelled. And then you know the talk in New York and, you know, is Eli done and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And so my question to Phil tomorrow, but I wanted to get your take. Is there a quarterback currently in the National Football League that could succeed behind the Giants' offensive line? And by succeed, I mean taking the team to the playoffs.
I don't know. I don't know that there is one. That's tough. And it sounds like I'm just jumping on the Giants offensive line. But let's just go through it very quickly, okay? Nate Solder, they got for so many different reasons. And when you talk to people around the organization, they say all the right things. Veteran guy, great leadership, captain of the team. But you know what I never hear them say? Playing at a high level.
He's been horrible.
Okay? So you don't hear that. Will Hernandez is the best offensive lineman they have, and he's the rookie out of UTEP at left guard. And I think he continues to get better. But he needs help, obviously, because guards play off of tackles and next to centers and what have you. Your center is Greco, who's been a nice warhorse throughout his career, can play any position in the offensive line, but he didn't begin the season as a starter. So he's now in the lineup, okay? And then you go to the right side, and you're saying, okay, what are we doing? They started with Eric Flowers. He's gone. Chad Wheeler's an undrafted free agent now, who's now starting at right tackle. Okay, so the question to me, Grant, would be if you asked any quarterback in the league, would you want to play behind the Giants offense? I can't imagine they would say yes right now. So that's the hard part. Everyone jumps on Eli, and look, he's made more than his share of errors along the way. Let's not act like, hey, it's only the offensive line. That would be incorrect. There have been throws that have been missed. There have been opportunities. Maybe he's checking it down too much. You saw Pat Shurmur on that Thursday night game wanting the ball downfield. But I don't know that he's a quarterback that feels like, you guys can say that. Have you timed how much time I have to throw the football? In a general play, he has the least amount of time in the league. It's been proven by the analytics throughout the season. So
you're right.
Good luck with all that, too. You want to throw the ball downfield, you got to block it up so that it can happen. If you can't block it up, your quarterback's getting hit again. And a lot of that leads to other errors because after a while, I don't care who you are, you feel those ghosts in the pocket even when they're not there because you think they're going to be there because they usually are most of the time. So it's a catch-22 for all of them. And I know everybody's saying, we should have drafted a quarterback, should have drafted a quarterback. Okay, then you don't have Barkley. That's cool. You don't have Barkley. The quarterback's more important. Maybe Darnold's starting for you. But he's still got to solve this offensive line too.
Yeah. Well, when you talk about offensive lines, 10 sacks by the Chicago by for
Baltimore.
Baltimore.
Ravens?
Yes. And 11. You know what? I saw this bit of trivia and I wanted to throw it at you because I know you're a football historian. The last guy that was sacked 10 times with 10 or fewer completions, he was in the 80s. Do you know his name?
Oh, in the 80s?
Yeah.
No, I don't know who that was.
Guido Merkins.
Come on.
Yeah.
Rob Guido Merkins was in New Orleans?
Yes, sir. They
How
said
about that?
They said he's the original Swiss Army knife because, Grant, he punted, he threw passes, he was special teams. The guy did a little bit of everything. What's happening, though, in Tennessee with their offensive line?
Well, Taylor Lewan got hurt early in the season and has been in and out of the lineup. Jack Conklin, who was their all-pro right tackle, blew his knee at the end of last year, hasn't really been able to play. Quentin Spain, you know, left guard. Josh Klein, right guard, center, you know, the kid out of Houston, Jones. Though that's kind of been their mainstays. But another part of the problem is they just have not gotten the running game going the way they expected. They expected Derrick Henry to be an absolute horse, and that just hasn't happened either. And they've been behind. And when you're behind with Baltimore, that's the end result because Baltimore brings the heat. They're back playing what they call Ravens football on defense, and they were just sensational. Marcus Mariota, Doug, had 10 pass completions in the game and got sacked 11 times.
Oof, goodness
gracious. Only player who's been sacked more, I think, and you talk about the number there with Guido Merkins. Grant will remember this one. Bart Starr, Thanksgiving Day, 1962, in Detroit, got sacked 12 times.
Good Lord.
Against the Detroit. Now, the Detroit Lions on defense were beasts back in the day. They got more guys in the Hall of Fame, and it would shock people, considering they never won a title with that crew because the offense was putrid. That was their problem. Mm-hmm. And Alex Karras should be in the Hall of Fame, and he's not as a defensive tackle. But they got to Bart Starr 12 times that day. It was the only loss the Packers had in 1962, Doug.
It's unbelievable. Wow. Yep.
They won the NFL title that year. So it happens on a game, and it can be corrected, but that was a brutal deal. Mariota, 10 completions, sacked 11 times. They were down 21-0, as I saw, and they just teed off on the young man and just came and got him. And so we'll see how it goes from there. But Rob Guido Merkins, my God. I thought you might go from that to Jim Delgaza.
Charles
knows Jim Delgaza.
Oh, my gosh. Don't get me started. Hey, you have a great evening. Always fabulous for you to make the time, and we'll look forward to chatting with you next week. You be well, Charles.
You guys do the same. Be safe in your travels, and congratulations on the start of another season, guys. Looking forward to watching it.
Appreciate you, buddy.
Thanks, Charles. Be good. That's Charles Davis, the NFL on Fox. Dave Yeager will talk basketball, Kings variety, next here on Sports 1140 KHDK. All guests come to you via the Fire Wings hotline. Try one of their delicious flavors of wings today. Fire Wings, just wing it. Tomorrow, it's the Kings and the Jazz. It's game one of 82. And joining us right now, the head coach of the Sacramento Kings, Dave Yeager. Dave, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm well. How are y'all?
Doing good. The emotions of the head coach as you get ready to start the season or what?
I think everybody's always excited to start a new season, and everybody's nobody's taken a loss yet, and everybody's hopeful and optimistic, and I'm happy. I got my voice back a little bit so we can have a better conversation and get after them guys, and hopefully we can get after the Jazz tomorrow night.
You know, Coach, when you look at a Jazz team and you got a young team in the Kings, they faced this Jazz team in the preseason. Obviously, it did not turn out well. What do you say to them? How do you go about the preparation of facing them during the regular season after that experience?
Well, I think, you know, in any competition, you know, anybody who, you know, thinks that they're better than you, whether it's going to be easy. And I think if, you know, they get off to a quick start, then, you know, your confidence rolls. A young team can be crushed mentally in those kinds of situations. So, you know, getting off to a quick start would help us. And that quick start doesn't mean it has to be we're up 10-2. It just means that, you know, we make things difficult for them, both ends of the floor, and try to get the pace of the game going up and down a little bit, and execute, take care of the basketball, and get what we're looking for.
They're obviously a different team, and Rudy Gobert is on the floor, and when he's off the floor, talk about, offensively, I don't even know if I would use the word attacking them when Rudy Gobert is on the floor, but he changes so much. Even if he doesn't get credit for a block shot or a rebound, he alters so many shots. What's a strategy like when you're going against a guy like that?
Yeah, dunk it if you can.
Yes, sir. There you go.
Right.
We had a lot of great shots, didn't we? I mean, I think if you look and go, oh, boy, they had a lid on the basket in the first quarter last week.
But, sure, yeah.
You know, we ended up shooting 50-some shots, I think, from in the painted area. But like you say, Grant, and, you know, a four-footer is a seven-footer with a little extra arc on it. It just everything changes a little bit. And I think our guys were a little shell-shocked, to be honest with you, to see that for the first time, some of our young guys. And that's a good experience. You'd rather have that experience in the preseason. That moment of, whoa, this is another level here. So I think that part of it's positive. And we're going to have some nights where the ball doesn't go in. But it was an extreme example there the other night.
With Donovan Mitchell, Coach, I want to say he's averaging about 29.7 against the Kings in the two or three games that they've faced them. Do you give him different looks? Do you double team him? How do you go about approaching a player that's a prolific scorer and has obviously worked on his game and his jump shot this offseason?
Yeah, it's definitely a challenge. Do you put different guys on or different size guys? And to me, the guy that really makes them go is Joe Ingles. He guards. He takes people out. He blocked three of Buddy's shots. And two of them were from behind.
Yep.
The other day, and he's just 6'8", and he makes plays for other people, and certainly he shoots 40-some%. But and then Donovan, they bring it to him, and he attacks, and it seems like he'll go score 2, 3, 4 times in a row. Then everybody else gets involved a little bit, and he really does a nice job. He just has a real nice feel of tempo of the game of when to go and when not to. So if you can, you got to try to speed him up a little bit. See if you can make him play in some crowds and like you say, give him some different looks between put some different guys onto him and just try to, stay in front of him as much as possible. I think if you're going to live with something, you'd rather live with, him shooting the ball over the top of you.
Dave Yeager joining us right here on Sports 1140 KHTK. In terms of number of players in your mind that you're going to be playing early in the season, is it 9, 10, 11? Do you have a number?
Yeah, it'll be no more than 10, but it'll probably be 10. We got a couple guys at each position, and that doesn't mean that I think last year I was more an advocate of playing guys, a higher number of guys an equal number of minutes. Like we talked about in the preseason last year, somewhere between 20 and 28, 8 or 9 guys should be in there. I think, you're more in a situation now where, Willie Cauley-Stein is proven that he's the guy at that position to say, he should play 28, 32 minutes. De'Aaron Fox should play, 32 or more minutes. So that doesn't mean, if you're a backup at that position, you're going to get kind of what's left. So if I do, plan on at this point playing 10 guys.
Coach, as a new season approaches tomorrow, you are unquestionably the leader of the team. But when you look at a young team like this, has a leader begin to emerge, has emerged, even if it's a young guy or an older guy as of yet?
I think it's going to take time as you go through the process. You might say, and it's manipulated different ways. You give guys tests on how they vote for captains. Or does captainhood mean anything anymore? Did nobody really care who goes out there and shakes hands with the referees? When we all grew up being a captain, having a C on your jersey, that really was that was a big deal.
Yes, it was.
And I think now it's more so who people look to internally for leadership, and it might not be an outward deal or something that anybody ever knows, but internally who that might be. And I think naturally it's always generally that your point guard is that guy to take that on. De'Aaron Fox, I think, has the shoulders that are wide enough to do that. And you got to go out and you got to prove it in games.
Right.
And that can just take a little while.
I think it's pretty obvious with a young team. There are going to be nights where it's not there. I think we saw that against a very good Jazz team. And I know that you were and De'Aaron were ill for the Portland game. But I was so impressed with, less than 24 hours later, the team that just got embarrassed and blown out on their home floor was able to bounce back, play very competitively against a team that, played most of their regulars. And, again, I'm looking for positive signs here. What were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I was pretty sick. Yeah.
Yeah, you didn't look good on the plane there, Dave.
That loss at home, you know, but, you know, we bounced back pretty good. We've got some resilient dudes. When you've got guys like Frank Mason on your roster, he was disappointed. You know, and I embarrassed him a little bit, not meaning to, but I did try to make my point. I used a fourth timeout in the first quarter because I'm trying to set the tone that our point guards need the basketball. We don't have a lot of playmaking. We got to get our guys with that can make plays to get the ball and get guys in positions, especially when we're down, you know, early in a game. And, you know, he was a little not happy about that. And I think he performed very well the next night. And some other guys came back and bounced back nicely as well. And I think that's nice to see. You get a day off. We've had a couple of good days of practice. And the biggest thing with this team, as we talked about, is try to keep it simple as possible with your schemes. We're going to make mistakes, but if you're making mistakes and you're flying around and going 100 miles an hour, you know, we can live with some of those as we learn and develop.
Yes, sir. I love that right there, Coach. I know in the Golden State game, ESPN, we've had some callers talk about the fact that they were going under the pick on Klay Thompson. I know schematically that's probably not the approach. You want to go over the top, or maybe it was trapping him, whatever. The ability to switch on the fly and take that, do you see maybe them growing in that way and being able to, in game, begin to change things?
As far as, like, schemes and stuff?
Yeah, meaning that, you know, if you're going under on Klay and he's hitting you for a jumper and you do it again, you just mentioned the ability to not maybe make the same mistake multiple times.
Yeah, especially when that's not the game plan, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I knew it wasn't.
Yeah, so, you know, you just kind of, you know, hey, you show him the tape the next day. And at the end of the day, until there's a – The ultimate teaching tool is the bench.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have an ability to show somebody the bench, and whether that be that case or something else,
right,
for the mistakes they make, and that guy that comes in and it doesn't make it any improvement or the score doesn't get better, the guy you just took out to try to show him the bench is sticking his tongue out at you going, hey, you know what? You need me.
Right.
You know, and we're hearing that in other places, oh, by the way, right?
Yeah.
You need me. So, you got to, as we get older and we get our roster filled up and, you know, there's going to be competition for mistakes that you have to hold guys accountable for, and you just got to come over and sit out.
You know, in the Seattle game, we finally got a chance to see Amon Shumpert, and then we were told on Friday night it was rest management, so he wasn't going to play a back-to-back. Is there any update you can give us? Is he good to go? Is he ready physically to play?
Yeah, good. That's good. He did get a good run there, about 18, 19 minutes there. I think at home against Utah was just good to get that first one out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, knock the rust off a little bit because it's been a little while for Shump. That we didn't go the next night. He's had a couple of real good days of practice, man, in every drill. And so we're looking forward to having him out there tomorrow night.
Awesome. Dave, we'll see you tomorrow. Have a great night. Thanks very much.
Appreciate you, Coach.
Thanks, you guys. You bet. Bye.
All right, Dave Yeager joining us. We'll take the break. We'll come back. How about some phone calls next at 339-1140, 800-920-1140, right here on Sports 1140 KHTK. Conversation with Dave Yeager at the end was Amon Shumpert is playing tomorrow, if we did not know. That's what I got out of that last answer.
Yes, and that I think that's a good thing. Grant, we mentioned his defensive capabilities against Donovan Mitchell, and Coach was right when you talk about Joe Ingles. I think that he is the heartbeat of that team. He does so many different things. He's a guy that you don't need to necessarily pass the ball or run the offense, but you can run the offense through him, hits timely shots. Defensively, he's solid, so he could, you know, he could also guard Joe Ingles as well.
All right, 339-1140 is the local number. That's 339-1140, 800-920-1140. Again, 339-1140, 800-920-1140. Good conversation this hour with Charles Davis from the NFL on Fox and with Dave Yeager. Your turn. So what are your expectations tomorrow, folks, and for this season? Now's the time because the season begins tomorrow. Doug and I will be on the air from Golden One Center, leading you right up until game night at 5:30, pregame at 6:30, and all the action at 7 o'clock. I think the Jazz are a 50-win team, and I think they're going to be a top-four team, barring injury, in the Western Conference. I think they have that ability. I like the makeup of the team. They have maybe the best defensive player in the game. They're good. I'm not sold on point guard for them. I know that Dante Exum maybe is better than Rubio, but Rubio starts, and he's just not a good shooter. I mean, so we talked about going under the screen against Klay Thompson, which is a mistake. You can do that against Ricky Rubio.
Yes, you can. You actually want him to step back and shoot it. Now, if he takes his time or if he gets a rhythm going, he can knock down some shots. And similar for Dante Exum, Grant. Now, the difference with Dante Exum is he brings 6'6", long, rangy playmaking ability, get to the basket, but he can't necessarily shoot the ball. Also, Aul Neto is a guy who they bring off the bench sometimes, but he doesn't have the same type of flair. So that is, if there is a weakness there, it is the point guard position. Maybe Dante Exum has a breakout year, but as of yet, it will be starting with Ricky Rubio.
All right, 339-1140, 800-920-1140. And the Kings then will leave Thursday for a three-game road trip. They will play in New Orleans on Friday, Oklahoma City on Sunday. Both of those teams are playing their home openers, and then they will conclude the three-game road trip in Denver. It's their first back-to-back of the year, as they will come home and play Memphis the very next night.
Yes, and you know what? It's tough. All those teams are either most likely going to be playoff teams or were playoff teams last year. The only one may be New Orleans Pelicans that might fall out of that, but they have a top 3 to 5 player on their team that can, and Anthony Davis that can dominate the game. So this is going to be a stretch for the Kings. First of all, facing a team that spanked you and embarrassed you in the preseason, and then you go on the road against three teams that were playoff teams right off the bat. Let's see where you're at.
All right, so we got that going on with the baseball playoffs. And, Enrique Hernandez, I talked about his comments after the game where they get shut out. Of course, he had to come out and apologize today, saying that's not what he meant. It's just mind-boggling to me, but that's what you get. I'm not really sure how that could be misconstrued. What he said was pretty obvious.
Yes, and, it's notorious that Los Angeles fans come in and come to the game late. I will say this for Enrique. I understand his mindset about the inner energy of the crowd. We couldn't hear the game, Grant. I did go home and watch most of it, but they weren't there. Understandably, that's where you came in and said, look, you put a donut on the board. If you want them to get involved, get them involved. And the Dodgers were unable to do that yesterday.
Yeah, the other part is, though, he was ripping the fans for booing Grandal, who was horrible behind the plate, so much so that he's not in the lineup tonight for game four. So, hey, here's the bottom line. The Dodgers really need to win both these games. I don't like their chances going to Milwaukee if they got to win both games 6 and 7. So this is a huge game for the Dodgers tonight, or else they may not even get back to Milwaukee. They lose tonight, they're down 3-1. They're in deep, deep trouble.
Yeah, this is you don't want to say a must-win, Grant, because it's only 2-1
right, sure,
right now. But you've put yourself in such a predicament going down 1-3 to this Milwaukee group that at any time Christian Yelich could all of a sudden find his bat and just turn this whole thing around. And before you know it, you might lose 1-4. So you got to be careful.
All right, so if you want to talk some baseball, we'll mix it in. Again, that game in the National League is coming up tonight, 3-2, as they go to the bottom of the seventh in Houston with Boston leading. Again, trying to go up 2-1 in that best-of-7 series. The Kings tomorrow, Utah, and game one of 82, and I wonder what will be the narrative after the game tomorrow. Will the Kings impress the 17,000-plus that are at the game? Will they win? If they don't win, will they make it a game? Will they be in the game with a couple of minutes to go? They're playing a good team. We know that. But then the Kings know that. That's another thing. There's no mystery about what you're getting into tomorrow because you just played them last week. And they dominated you. So it's not like there should be no surprises tomorrow.
Yeah, you should be ready to lace them up and go. The one good thing about the NBA, Grant, and we said this in the preseason, you and I were talking after the game, is after a spanking like what Utah put on you, you gotta fly up to Portland. You got to play the next night. They come fast and furious. The only problem is Coach Yeager mentioned it in an interview that we just had with him, the mentality of young teams. Sometimes it can break your spirit. You got to make sure that you learn how to put these games behind you and move on to the next one with the same focus and the same energy and get after it, as opposed to letting losing streaks or letting losing seep in and start to become who you are.
Yeah, especially for the young players that, you know, again, these are all high draft picks. They all come from winning programs. I mean, De'Aaron Fox experienced it last year, but, you know, you look at Marvin Bagley, they don't lose at Duke. You know, you look at Harry Giles, you know, even though he didn't play a lot, you know, and he's a rookie this year. I mean, you know, it's the same thing. These guys aren't accustomed to losing. You don't want them to get used to losing. So we'll see. Hey, you know what? It's one game. It's 82 game schedule, but you really don't want to come out and have a dud. I don't care who you are in your home opener. We know the place is going to be rocking at the beginning of the game. There's going to be an abundance of energy. It's not going to be like Dodger Stadium. The place is going to be off the hook tomorrow. We'll see if that, you know, gets the players revved up. You know, similar, and again, I'm not saying Summer League, but you remember what happened in the first game of Summer League, what
yes,
that place was like
it,
and what
it
that
was
did.
Rocking.
Yep. Yeah, and again, I'm not, what I'm saying is I think this place is going to be an electric, crazy atmosphere tomorrow, and let's see if the players can feed off it or not.
Well, you know, also, Grant, the ability to learn. I mentioned Houston, and Chris Paul is doing an interview, and he's talking about Eric Gordon, and he was saying the fact that on their team, they don't change the style that they play. If I've missed 0 for 8, I'm not going to change. We're going to keep shooting because that's how we play. What I'm talking about now for the Kings is the ability to come out with energy and then sustain that energy for 48 minutes. That will be crazy for that type of a crowd. Now, does that produce a win? We'll have to see. But the point is, you got to learn how to play with that type of energy and enthusiasm.
All right, in the East tonight, a nice matchup to start the season. The first game of the year is Philadelphia at Boston. The Boston Celtics, I don't see any weaknesses on this team, assuming they're healthy. Do you?
No. The only weakness, Grant, will be there's only one ball, and you're going to have to figure out how, you know, Brad Stevens, and he's done a great job with this in the past, is how to work with the guys and put them in, you know, and make sure that everyone is getting minutes. But they have a deep bench. They have a fantastic point guard if he is healthy, and Kyrie Irving. You know, Jason Tatum was great last year. I mean, he got the ability because Gordon Hayward went down. But this is a team with a deep bench. I think that you know, I've picked them, Grant. I think that this is a team that should win the NBA championship. They match up against a Golden State team that's not as deep as they've once been. They have the best players. I totally agree. But this is a team in Boston, I think, that could do it.
All right. Who's the second best team in the East?
I would say that it's probably the Philadelphia 76ers, a team that they are playing tonight. They are going to have to prove that they've taken the next step. Markelle Fultz will be starting tonight, and that's shown that they obviously trust him. Ben Simmons is the question mark, Grant. What type of step does he take? Is his jump shot improved? We see that he's a floor general, but that is probably the second best team.
I'm going to go a different direction in the second best team in the East. And I'm going to say it's not going to be Philadelphia. And when I look at the teams in the East, I'm with you. I don't think there's anyone in the East that's going to be able to stay with Boston, assuming that they don't have significant injuries, which they had last year, and they were still really, really good. There are two teams that I think are going to challenge for the second spot. One is Milwaukee with Giannis Antetokounmpo. Mm-hmm. He is the real deal. I like their backcourt of Bledsoe and Brogdon. I like their shooters. I like their bench. And the other team that I think is going to be very good this year are the Indiana Pacers. All right, we are 2 hours in. We're going to come right back. We've got so much more to come. Grant Napier and Doug Christie, Sports 1140 KHTK.